From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. After yet another election where the political tides shifted, this time it was Republicans who got shellacked. So now that the dust has settled a bit, the New Hampshire GOP has been looking back at why its candidates did so poorly and looking ahead to what the party should do in the future. Also, to guide them for the next 2 years, Republican lawmakers late last week elected their leaders. In the House, they chose longtime Bartlett State Rep Gene Chandler as minority leader. A former House Speaker, Chandler is known for working across the aisle on some issues, and as the saying goes, for disagreeing without being disagreeable. In the state Senate, Republicans supported the current Senate President, Peter Bragdon of Milford, another longtime lawmaker known for a focus on policy rather than politics. Both men represent a departure from the more activist, conservative tone set at the State House for the past 2 years under House Speaker Bill O'Brien, a combative style that won the party some policy victories, but that some Republicans now say cost them the election. Still others strongly disagree, saying the Democrats just played a better ground game and that Republicans will have to work twice as hard for victories in 2014. Today in The Exchange, Granite State Republicans reflect on the election. And today we want to hear from our Republican listeners. What's your take on your party's recent defeats, especially here in New Hampshire? How do you hope to see the GOP moving forward? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have four guests for the hour. Carolyn McKinney is with us, chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus of New Hampshire, which works toward limited government, free markets, and personal liberty in the Republican Party. And Carolyn, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Fergus Cullen, freelance columnist and principal of Fergus Cullen Communications, a public affairs consulting firm. He's also a former Republican State Party chair. Fergus, thanks for being here. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Also with us, Jack Kimball. He's a former state GOP chairman as well, chairman of Granite State Patriots Liberty PAC, and president of Great Bay Facility Maintenance Service, Inc. And Jack, thanks for coming over from the Seacoast, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Tom Rath, former New Hampshire Attorney General. He's been a senior advisor to the campaigns of many presidential candidates, including Mitt Romney and George W. Bush. He's also a former longtime Republican National Committeeman. Tom Rath, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and Tom, I want to start with you since you have been through many, many, many elections here in New Hampshire, seeing the ups and downs of your party. Why do you think Republicans did so poorly, especially here in the Granite State?
Well, I think at times the tides turn against you. And one of the things I've learned is you got to be careful about overreacting too soon after an election. I think you need to let the dust settle a little bit. I think what we are having to deal with at the moment is a set of demographic concerns that we need to be sensitive to as a party. The fact is, and again, I was more involved at this time through at the national level, but I think the same argument can be made in New Hampshire. Approximately at this point, 28% of the voting population is what we would call a minority. By that, I mean either African-American, Latino, Asian, and that is the growing part of our population. That particular voting block, that 28%, we lost something like between 85 and 88% to the Democrats and particularly President Obama nationally. Of the other 72%, approximately 53 to 55% are women. And we lost badly among women, and we can discuss why, but clearly that is a problem with us. So that I'm on the sort of white vote, we get 60% of it, but if they start doing the math, it doesn't add up. And I think New Hampshire is a little bit like that. This is 8 out of 9 gubernatorial elections we have lost. This is 3 out of 4 presidential elections we have lost, going back 12 years or 16 years. This is 3 out of 4 elections for control of the state House of Representatives we have lost. And I think it's telling us something about the needs we have as a party, not to change our ideology at all. I don't think you need to be – I'm not recommending, as some people suggest, we ought to be less conservative. But we need to be more open. We need to be more welcoming. We need to particularly look for programs that allow us to reach out to those populations that, for whatever reason, our message isn't resonating with. And we did not do a good job. We had 99,000 new registrations, the Secretary of State says yesterday.
It's a lot of new voters.
Yeah, now a lot of those, by the way, are what we call re-registrations. So it's not like all that. But in that group, we lost about 3-1. And that's the, when Romney loses the state by 42,000, it's right in that core group. And that does speak to the quality of the Democratic ground game vis-a-vis ours. So we've got some work to do. I don't blame the Democrats. I look to what can we do as a party better. And I've got a lot of time in this party, and I want to see us get better, and I want to see us get back to articulating a strong message that people can relate to.
Well, and Carolyn McKinney, let's bring you into this too. Again, chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus. Why do you think Republicans didn't do so well on Election Day?
Well, I think Tom is, you know, hit the nail on the head when it comes to both the demographics and overreacting and sticking to our principles but articulating them better. Unfortunately, you know, I put out an op-ed a couple weeks ago that basically said, you know, we need to do a better job messaging. We need to be reaching out to these populations that we don't typically reach out to. I mean, take a look. I read an article in Politico right after the election that kind of broke down the Romney campaign a little bit. And, you know, one thing that really jumped out at me is that Paul Ryan had wanted to go into urban areas and really, you know, let them know how the Republican ideas of free markets will lead to prosperity and new jobs for them and for their families. And he was prevented from doing that. And I think, you know, we're so focused on that few percentage in the middle that swings that we're not looking for new voters and to reach out our message. And I think that's one area where the Liberty wing of the party that's growing can really lend a hand. You know, you take a look at somebody like Ron Paul or Rand Paul, who are really driving out thousands of young people to their rally at these college campuses. And, you know, that's really one important area where we need to be getting people is the young people and the message of liberty, and which are core Republican, longtime traditional messages, are really resonating with those young people. So I think it's just a matter of reaching out to new places where we haven't been willing to go before. You know, we're talking a lot in our echo chamber, and we need to really be kind of Republican evangelists in a sense.
So don't just talk to each other. Talk to people who might be interested in the party but haven't yet come over to your side.
Right, exactly. And our messages, you know, unfortunately, you know, it was disturbing to see some really bad messages that were put out by the Democrats in order to really, you know, strike fear in the hearts of some populations, like, you know, Republicans are going to take away women's birth control, which is just absurd. No Republican is suggesting that birth control be made illegal, but that's what, you know, the message that was out there, and we didn't combat it. We didn't say, no, we want you to have freedom, but that also means, you know, freedom from people who don't want to pay for your birth control. It's $5 a month for, you know, the pill. What's the, you know, you can pay for this yourself. So anyway, you know, I think sending out the messages of freedom, I think, really resonates with a lot of people. And you know, we need to find a way to articulate our principles in such a way that really resonates with people.
Let me invite our listeners also to join us again. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, Republicans here in New Hampshire are reflecting on the recent elections. Let's get your thoughts. If you're a Republican, why do you think your party did not do so well in the Granite State in the past elections, losing many key seats, as Tom Rath mentioned? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And Fergus Cullen, I want to hear why you thought also that the GOP didn't do so well. If in your answer, though, you could also address what Carolyn and Tom brought up. Is it that you didn't do a good job messaging, or is there a problem with the message?
Yeah, you know, there are five stages of grief, and we're 2 weeks after the election. You know, there's denial, there's anger, there's bargaining, there's depression, there's acceptance. I'm still in the depressed stage. I'm not quite as hopeful yet. I'm not quite as forward-looking yet. I will get there. As Carolyn and Tom are already looking towards future elections. Messaging is part of it, but look, the state is changing. I think a key question for New Hampshire Republicans is, was 2010 the outlier, or is the new normal 2006, 2008, 2012? And there are some in the party who think that 2010 represents sort of the true nature of New Hampshire. And there are plenty of people who think that 2006 thought that that was the new nature of New Hampshire, which is to say 1 year a big Republican year, 1 year a big Democratic year. I tend to think that New Hampshire is a very competitive state. I like Charlie Arlinghouse's analogy that when they hire a legislature, they're hiring them to do a job for 2 years and they will fire them. There are lots of legislators who I think sometimes think that the voters voted for them because they studied their issues and they agreed with them and that's what they endorsed. I don't think that's actually how the elections come about. I look at some of the self-inflicted wounds that Republicans had. Look, when Richard Murdoch in Indiana says something stupid, New Hampshire Republicans pay for it. When Todd Akin in Missouri says something stupid, New Hampshire Republicans pay for
it. These are the abortion and rape comments.
For example. And, when other Republicans do silly things in Concord when they're elected, Republicans up and down the ballot in New Hampshire pay for it. And I think that's part of what happened. Look, nationally, it was a disappointing election. Mitt Romney underachieved. But it's not like we lost 40 seats in the U.S. Congress. It's not like six incumbent U.S. senators were defeated running for reelection. But in New Hampshire, it was a wave election. We saw 75 incumbents in the House get defeated. Only one in the state Senate lost control of the executive council, lost the governor's election by a wide margin, lost two congressional seats. Arguably, I think, the worst election of any state in the country. And we ought to take a look at that introspectively.
Now, Jack Kimble, I want to bring you into this, but we're heading into a break. So, Fergus, instead, I'll ask you to quickly follow up. You said, in New Hampshire, when Republicans do, quote, silly things in Concord, that hurts all Republicans. What are you talking about?
Well, look, I think that the legislature that was elected did damage because tone matters a lot. The sense of priority matters a lot. And they primed an electorate in New Hampshire to think the worst of all Republicans. They were not given the benefit of the doubt. Look, Ovid Lamontagne is a sunny conservative, a happy warrior, and yet he was defeated badly. And I think all four of us on this call were strong Ovid supporters, including in the primary.
All right. Well, Jack, your turn after a short break, and we'll start taking your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email is great, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
Good morning. It's 9:19. More of the Exchange coming up. And at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the tax policy debate, raising rates versus limiting deductions. That's the Diane Rehm Show at 10 on NHPR. Keep in touch with NHPR wherever you go with our iPhone app. You can stream us 24/7, download all of our podcasts, and receive news updates throughout the day. We're always trying to make it easier for you to stay connected. Download the NHPR app for free at Apple's App Store. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. From Comcast Business Class, provider of Internet voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions to keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at 800-501-6000. And Capital Center for the Arts in Concord presenting the Improvised Shakespeare Company in the Spotlight Cafe, Wednesday, November 28th at 7:30. Tickets at ccanh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite State Republicans react to our most recent election. We invite you to join us if you're a Republican. Why do you think your party did so poorly here in New Hampshire on Election Day? And what do you hope the party does moving forward to not repeat what happened this year? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Jack Kimble, again, former state GOP chairman, chair of Granite State Patriots Liberty PAC. We haven't gone to you yet. Your broad thoughts, Jack, and then we'll get into detail on why you think Republicans, especially here in New Hampshire, did so poorly on Election Day.
Well, I'm going to come at this from a significantly different direction because, and I think the folks at the table and Carolyn probably agree with this. One of the things we got to look at is this culture change we're going through in this country. I mean, that we have, in my view, a very uneducated electorate. This election shouldn't have gone this way. I mean, all things being considered, the decisions that this president made during his tenure should have really meant a landslide, in my personal view. We have really dumbed down the country. The education process, the federally mandated education system, has done more to indoctrinate kids than it has to educate. We used to be the tops in math and science, and now we're down around 18th in the world. But you have a president that comes in and initiates an $800 billion stimulus package, takes over the automotive industry, the banking industry. Then, of course, Obamacare was slammed down our throats. Heck, we in this last 4 years, the welfare state's grown roughly 30%. We got roughly 49 million people now on food stamps. The BET card situation is an abomination. Expansion of government in the last 4 years, in my view, has been the largest in my lifetime. We got an entitlement society. All of this plays into what happened in this election, because you have an awful lot of people right now that are reliant on big government for their subsistence.
This
in
is
some
the gifts argument
right. Yeah.
that Mitt Romney made, that the Democrats just gave handouts to everybody, so of course they
voted
Democratic.
I think, and that's partly true. I mean, he took some hits for that, but he's not incorrect in making that comment. And I think, and I have to say, I thank Mitt and Paul Ryan for the effort they put in. It was a Herculean effort. And why he would want this job, I have no idea. I mean seriously. But I feel strongly that messaging, we talk about that. That's a huge issue for the Republican Party. We have got to change our messaging so that it is all-inclusive and encompassing. We are the party of hope. We are the party that can bring. And look, the best solution to the welfare state is a good job. That's the solution to this problem. And we've got to make the population understand that, and that's how we bring ourselves out of this. Expand the tax base, and you'll have plenty of tax revenue for both the country and the state. It works both in the state of New Hampshire. So again, it's messaging. And the other thing is getting out the vote. Barack Obama started his reelection campaign the day after he got elected. And we don't tend to do that. We're behind all the time.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about that, because that's been an issue, yep. The get out the vote effort. And I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Jack, but Tom Rath, it's interesting that we're talking about the New Hampshire Republican Party right now. Please tell us there's been a major death.
Yes, former Senator Warren Rudman, former Attorney General Warren Rudman, passed away last night in Washington, D.C. about 11:30 at night. He was 82 years old, served combat platoon leader in Korea, decorated war hero, longtime servant, mentor of an awful lot of people in the state, one of whom is talking now, one of the dear, great friends in my life and a great friend of the state, even in his years after elected office, running things like Common Cause and being effective, I think, in shouting out the message of the dangers of the deficit and how we need to treat with it. A colorful, delightful, aggressive, smart person who meant a lot to the state, cared deeply for the state, we don't get to replace people like that.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure we'll be following up on that story. The union leaders reporting again that Warren Rudman died overnight. He began his public career as New Hampshire Attorney General under Governor Walter Peterson. He'd been ill for a long time, so NHPR will definitely be following up on that. Today, this hour, we are looking at the fate of Rudman's beloved Republican Party and why it did so poorly in the recent elections. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go to the phones now. Our lines are jammed. And let's talk to Michael in Portsmouth first. Michael, you've been hanging on for a while. Thanks a lot.
Howdy. Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me, and I wanted to lead with, I'm actually undeclared, and the reason I'm calling in is because I want better candidates for both parties, so that way when one side loses or the other side loses, people aren't looking to secede from the nation. What I have to say, though, is the reason the Republican ticket didn't get my vote is because of social issues. I agree with a lot of the fiscal talk that I hear from Republicans. Most of my Republican friends, I agree with them. But when somebody says that same-sex marriage is wrong or things along that line, it really turns me off. And also, with all due respect to Jack, saying that we have a welfare society, I've worked since I was 12 years old. I've used the help of the government once for 3 months to help me out with unemployment when a bunch of rich bankers blew up the world economy. And when I hear talk like that, it just pushes me away. So
let's,
I think...
Yeah, and Michael, thank you. Let's talk about the social issues that you mentioned. And Carolyn McKinney, this has come up. There are a fair number of Republicans who say, look, let's put these social issues to bed. Let's not re-debate same-sex marriage. You know, let's just stay away from this stuff. It's turning off people like Michael. What do you think, Carolyn?
Well, I mean, I think Republicans have been running away from those issues. I mean, we put it in our platform, but we're not willing to defend it. And so, in some public policy instances, I think there's, you know, room to take a look at application of principles. Like in my op-ed, I brought up the issue of immigration as an example and how, you know, the self-deportation policy is not terribly good, and it, you know, really doesn't take into consideration the dignity of these human beings who are here. And so we really need to rethink about that. But that, you know, take a look at wanting the, you know, free labor to travel across country lines, and how we can, you know, put forward alternative policies that will actually, you know, help us and that are true to our principles. But and I think kind of in the same way, I think we need to articulate, you know, why the family is so important. And, you know, one thing that I come back to is that, you know, when you erase the family or break the family, you know, the family is our first society. It's where we learn how to be good citizens. And, you know, there are problems, you know, when it comes to the social studies, you know, or studies that take a look at family structures, and the best family structure is a two-parent home with a mother and a father. And that,
Carolyn, let me just jump in and ask you, you know, and I know there are people who say what you're saying, but boy, there are a lot of people, including Republicans, who say, no, same-sex marriage is a done deal here in New Hampshire. Leave it alone. Move on. And they disagree with you, not just Democrats, but Republicans.
And I'm one of them, right?
So, okay. So go ahead, Carolyn, real quick, and then Fergus, I do want to hear from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think we need to be talking about the positive message about how you know, the nuclear family is important. And one thing that struck me about, you know, the conventions is that, you know, how the Democrats really kind of demonized the Republican convention, saying that it went back to the 50s because we were talking about, you know, loving families and you know, a long-lasting marital relationship between Ann and Mitt Romney. And I was just blown away because, you know, this is the type of situation that we actually should want for our society. And that's not to say that, you know, everything else is necessarily bad, but it's not producing the best citizens. And take a look at, you know, single mothers. So wouldn't they, you know, when we say men should be stepping up and taking responsibility for their families, you know, wouldn't single mothers come rally around that? Like, yes, they should be taking responsibility because their child too, you know.
And Carolyn, let me just let Fergus jump in, and then I do want to go to a couple more of our callers. So go ahead, Fergus, and then back to our listeners.
You know, I think the Republican Party needs to modernize, and that means adapting our timeless principles to changing times and to modern times. And I think especially in New Hampshire, being against civil rights for gays and abortion policy has become a threshold issue, dividing Republican candidates from huge segments of the electorate. They don't hear about our strong fiscally conservative message. What the legislature did this last year was heroic in terms of rolling back spending and tax increases in the legislature, but it was lost because so many voters aren't interested in hearing the rest of the Republican message on this. And listen, I'm proposing a strategic retreat. you know, where we stop refighting settled issues, refighting battles from the 1970s and 1980s. And especially, you know, this means saying, Republican candidates saying, look, I accept as settled law New Hampshire's policy when it comes to civil rights for gays, and I will make no effort to change our abortion policy. It gives you an opportunity at least to have the conversation with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of swing voters who are predisposed not to even listen to the rest of the Republican argument.
Let's take another call. This is Mary Ann waiting in Concord. Hi, Mary Ann. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning. Good morning to your panel.
Go ahead, Mary Ann.
I just wanted to say that the Republican Party needs to clean out the old guard and party hacks and get in with the Tea Party, which is represents taxed enough already, and they shouldn't be demonized for a fiscal conservatism. And they include Democrats and independents as well. I think we need to embrace our libertarian partners in the party and also bring in a lot more of the younger folks that would have voted for Ron Paul but abstained because they didn't want to vote for Romney. I think that the Republican Party, through what we affectionately call rhinos and Democratic operatives, have cannibalized themselves. And I do want your panel to discuss voter fraud this election round. In 2008 in Londonderry, a gentleman who was in charge of the voting machines stole memory cards and had them in his trunk. He was subsequently penalized and sent to jail for a year. But in this election, we are still, like the panel had mentioned, the dust has not settled yet, and we still have this under investigation. We're going to follow it through.
Well, Marion, let's talk about the Tea Party, and I'm glad you brought that up. And Jack Kimball, I know you kind of came into New Hampshire politics with the Tea Party. What do you think? Marion is saying, you know, let's clean out the old guard and make it more of a Tea Party party.
Well, I think a couple things. First of all, let's take a look at the Republican primary. The Republican primary had an awful lot of candidates, but the vast majority of those candidates were conservative.
Talk about the presidential primary.
Yeah, the presidential primary. And when you look across the board, Herman Cain, Rick Santorum, Ron Paul, you had others, Newt Gingrich, others that I would consider to be very conservative candidates. 70% of the Republican population in this state pretty much were backing one or the other of most of the conservatives. When we came into the final days, you saw how the vote was split, and Mitt Romney was the last man standing, primarily, I think, because of Mitt's position with respect to the Republican Party. But to me, clearly, most of the Republican Party tends to fall on the conservative side of the fence. Having said that, and I initially backed Herman Cain and then Newt, I wholeheartedly got behind our nominee, Mitt Romney. And I think it was an extraordinary pick to pick Paul Ryan as the vice presidential candidate. I said it was a great ticket. But I think that, that when you talk about the Tea Party, you're really talking about an American movement here. You're talking about people who love this country, that are patriotic, that believe in small government, to believe in reduced spending, tax cuts, and conservative values. And that includes traditional marriage and the tenets that go along with that. Well, I am pro-life. I believe that life is sacred. It should be protected. And I'm unabashedly unashamed to say it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's part of our platform, and that's what we should be proud of.
Here's a question for you, Jack. Mm-hmm. The Democrats successfully used the words Tea Party and Bill O'Brien in this election. Somebody wrote, I think it was a Republican, who said all Maggie Hassan had to say was Tea Party and Bill O'Brien, and she ran away with the election. So it seemed like this cycle, Tea Party was a net negative for
Republicans. Well, I think, you know, they were calling Ovid LaMontagne an extremist during the entire campaign. I know Ovid's not an extremist. Again, this comes down to messaging.
Was it Bill O'Brien then? Did he pull it down?
No, we got 298 of the state reps during that election of the 400 total. And you talk about herding cats. I mean, this is a huge responsibility.
And every Bill gets a hearing.
And I'm telling you, I give Bill a lot of credit for the accomplishments that he had. But you do have a lot, and you have a lot of opinions. The one thing about the Republican Party is that we have a lot of opinions. And I think people are certainly justified in expressing those. But again, what's important is getting the message out about the accomplishments in a positive way. And I do believe that the focus needs to be on fiscal and financial issues, certainly. But the social issues are also important. They're part of the makeup of this party.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom? And then back to our callers. Go ahead. The Tea Party. Was it a drag on the party this year?
First of all, I think the Tea Party which is really hard to speak of it as a monolithic movement, because I don't think it is. I think it's lots of people all with great energy and passion coming together. And I think what tended to bring them together were economic issues. I mean, smaller government, higher taxes. That really led the sort of energy of the 2010 election. I continue to go back to what Ronald Reagan said. Somebody who agrees with me 80% of the time is not my enemy. And where we get Republican consensus typically, I go back to the days. I am an old party hack. I'm an old establishment hack. I go back to the days when we won elections. We go back to the what brings us together is economic issues, where Bill O'Brien, I thought, did an extraordinary job of leading is actually cutting the cost of New Hampshire government. Where that message got diffused was this constant stream, and I looked at a lot of polling data. I listened to phone calls that pollers made with New Hampshire citizens. I looked at the data, and it was the set of social issues which the Democrats were able to demonize. They did a better job of it than us. That would be attached to every spending bill, would be some kind of an abortion thing. That drove people crazy. And I realize Jack is exactly right. Being speaker is perhaps one of the most thankless, next to being a party hack, is one of the most thankless jobs you can have in politics. But you need to control it. And I don't want to go on, but I think we need to get the emphasis back on the right syllable.
All right, let's take another call. This is Mel waiting in Candia. Hi, Mel, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My comment is I differ with the panel. I think we need to do a little bit less salesmanship and a lot less talking of our points. It seemed like the more we kept talking about our points, the farther down we drove the polls. And
what do you mean by that, Mel? I'm not really sure what you mean.
Well, I mean, I think it's easier to see on the national level, but I think it happened here too. I mean, for instance, as soon as the gay marriage issue came up, or the 47%, I mean, everybody knew that there was tapes out there somewhere. And if we had never talked about them, it would never have given the Democrats an opportunity to drag up the tapes. But we kept bringing it up and bringing it up and bringing it up and giving them more and more opportunity, which they were more than happy to take. So I think we were our own worst enemy, both in the state and nationally.
Your own worst enemy in terms of, Mel, just not following up when bad things happened? Is that what you're saying?
No, not letting the bad thing happen to begin with. If we never talked about these social issues, if we never hammered it away, they would never have dragged up the tapes.
I see what you're saying. Okay, Mel, thanks for the call. Real quick on that, and then we're going
briefly,
to a break.
One
Tom.
One thing we missed a lot in this election was that what the polling data told us about New Hampshire. Because even though the country, people said basically it was right track, wrong track, was underwater, New Hampshire was 35% right track. And it was very hard in that setting for Ovid, Lamontagne, and others to say, how are we going to differentiate from Hassan, who clearly ran as a return of John Lynch, to get to the point where people saw the consequences of it when you had about a 2-to-1 right track, wrong track margin in favor of the way things were.
All
and
right.
We needed to draw that distinction better.
Lots more conversation after a short break, so stay with us.
This is NHPR, where support comes from your members and from Grapponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Grapponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at grapponi.com. And from A&E Coffee Roastery and Teas, holiday gifts for fresh roasted organic coffees and whole leaf teas, including organic fair trade coffee from Rwanda. Cafe and Carriage Depot Plaza, Route 101A, Amherst. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, from the pages of The Pilgrim. It's a journal of poetry and essays written by homeless people. We'll talk to writers who, until now, felt invisible. Also, a portrait of the nun who led Tibetan rebels into battle against the Chinese, and other stories from the convent's most unconventional habits. I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us for Word of Mouth today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a panel of New Hampshire Republicans looks at the last election and where they hope their party goes from here. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on The Exchange page at nhpr.org. And all of you, let's take another call. This is Laura in Plainfield. Hi, Laura. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I have some comments. Having run for the New Hampshire House a few times, I really think it would be a good idea to encourage more women to run for the House. And I also think that it would have been great if Pam Tucker had won the minority speaker position. I think that would have said a lot about where we're going and what we want to do and what we want to accomplish. I also know that where I'm from, there wasn't a lot of, well, there was no real existence of a phone call center either in Lebanon or in Claremont to try and do a get-out-the-vote.
Oh, that's interesting.
We would have had to have either driven to Keene, which is an hour away or so, or driven to Concord to set up phone calls. I know in the past we'd had some kind of agreement with other places to do phone calling, but it just wasn't there this time around.
Well, Laura, this is two really good points. And Carolyn McKinney, the first point I'd like you to hit, and that's what has been called the woman problem. Why do you think there is such a big gender gap for women? They tend to vote more Democratic, and especially single women. And what do you, as a Republican woman, think that the party should do about it? On the mechanics, I think Jack Kimball and maybe Fergus Cullen, I'll talk to you about that. But go ahead, Carolyn.
Point is kind of practically speaking, someone like me, I have four young children and, you know, who knows if we'll have some more. And, you know, so I'm going to be raising kids for for a long time. And that kind of prevents me from doing something like running for state rep. And I think, you know, at least the Republican women that I know are a lot in the same boat. We, we believe in traditional family values, and that means we raise our children. And so, you know, I think that kind of plays into it. And I'm not saying that Democrats don't or anything like that, but I'm just saying that, you know, in my experience, that's, you know, that might be one reason that there's fewer women on the Republican side to run for office. But I do think that there are some women, you know, coming up through the ranks too, you know, especially on the, again, I think the young people are drawn to this message of liberty. And I think, you know, the more that kind of infuses into the party, the more we're going to see more people, including women, come up through the ranks. And
what about appealing to women voters, Carolyn? You know, why do you think there is this gender gap?
Well, I think in this election in particular, you know, the Democrats have been very effective in demonizing and actually distorting the facts when it comes to, you know, women's issues. For example, you know, Planned Parenthood saying that, you know, Maggie Hassan is for women's health and implying that Ovid Lamontagne isn't, which is just totally absurd. You know, Planned Parenthood doesn't give mammograms like, you know, like President Obama said in the debates, and they don't, you know, that a majority of their business is, you know, is abortion.
Well, I don't think that's really fair to say, Carolyn, that the majority of their business is abortion. But go ahead. You're saying that, you know, that the Democrats did a good job demonizing issues that women care about. But what about your party? What more could it do to attract women? This gender gap, Republicans say, is a big problem.
Well, you know, I do think if we were articulating, you know, stuff about the family and supporting the family, I think that does resonate with a lot of women out there. And I think we do need to have an answer to those attacks from you know, the Democrats when our position on an issue like abortion is being distorted. And so, you know, I think we need to have an answer. And we haven't been answering. We've been saying, you know, economic issues only. And you know, we're not even defending ourselves and our positions. So, you know, I think we need to figure out the answers here. And and a good way to talk about them. You know, do we talk about the abortion issue in terms of science? You know, the there is a human being in the womb, and you know, it has its own specific DNA, it has its own blood type. There are, I think, ways to approach it that we don't generally, you know, in terms that we don't generally talk about. But I think, you know, perhaps approaches that might win over people who are, you know, open to hearing them.
And to Laura's other point, Jack Kimball, to you, I think party mechanics, she lives in the Upper Valley. She wanted to do, you know, some work for the party on Election Day, some phone banking. What about the party itself? This whole thing about the Democrats did a better job getting out the vote. Laura, our caller from the Upper Valley, seems to be confirming that. What do you think as a former state party chair?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to make one comment about the women vote. We saw that Mitt Romney did extraordinarily well with married women.
Yeah, it's single women.
But single women did very poorly. And the same thing in reverse with
and younger
Barack Obama.
Women and yeah. Minority women.
So the messaging that we have to get out and the message period has to be really directed at single women, and we have to do better to garner their vote. Now, another thing, we talked about getting women to run. I mean, that was what part of this question was about. And I really have to say, and when I was running for governor, one of the things I would say to people every chance I got was, look, don't look for anyone else. Don't look for somebody else. If you're upset about the way things are going, look in the mirror. You run. And we had a lot more women come out and run. And I think that what's important is that they've got to realize that women, no different than men, that they have great value, that they can do these things if they really set their minds to doing it. As far as the mechanics are concerned, I think what happens to us, and another thing with the Democrats, is they certainly buried us with social medias. And just the tweeting was 8-1, you know, things of that
really
nature. Yeah, 8-1. I mean, so we've got to certainly get better at that. But another thing is make it easier for people who want to help.
Like
I don't
Laura
see any reason
Valley.
Why she couldn't make these phone calls from home. You shouldn't have to be going to a phone bank. If you structure it such that you can make them at home, give them their lists, give them their instructions and their talking points, they will do it. And a lot of folks can't go to the call centers, not because of geographic convenience, but they may have a couple children. So they can't leave the house and they would like to help, you know, and put the kids to bed and make some calls. So we've just got to get better at this and give it some thought. You could get a lot more oomph in the call centers and getting people to do some work for you if you make it easy for them to do it.
I want to ask you also about party mechanics, but also Fergus party message. We keep coming back to this. Some have said that your party did better when John Sununu, very aggressive and tough, was in charge, and that perhaps Wayne McDonald was too gentle.
Well, you know, I have a very dim view of the power of political parties. Having been there, Jack's been there. The power, they have no money because of existing campaign finance rules. And here in New Hampshire, if Wayne chooses to step down, we'll be looking at our 8th state party chairman in 9 years.
Wow, really?
It's been tough. And it's an unpaid volunteer position. Sometimes the wind is at your back. Sometimes the wind is at your face. I understand that some people appreciate the aggressive style. But, you know, I frankly think 2010, we won everywhere, including in 49 states, when John Sununu wasn't chairman, which isn't to say that the party wasn't strong and took, you know, maximized the opportunities in 2010. But I don't think it would have made any difference who had been the state party chairman this past cycle. I really don't. Now, in terms of opportunities for women candidates, let me tell you, Republicans have not been in this much need for candidates since 1980. Since 1980 have we not had 5 open major offices in New Hampshire from a Republican seat. So if you are a young Republican woman out there, now is your time. Listen, Kelly Ayotte had mentors and people who encouraged her to run. She was, by the way, a social conservative who won big in a good year for Republicans. Margaret Thatcher, two generations ago, had mentors who encouraged her and put her in opportunities to succeed. You know, Republicans ought to be doing that with young women Republican candidates up and down the ballot.
All right. Well, Laura, lots of points to follow up on. Thanks for calling in. Let's take Rod in Dover. Hi, Rod. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for letting me talk. This is especially for Tom first. Tom, this is Rod Paul, and I'm very sorry to hear about Warren Rudman, and I know that means something to you personally.
Thanks, Rod.
My comment is this. In my memory, the Republican Party usually fared best when it was in the center, led from the center, back a few decades ago from the center right. Now probably it would profit best from the center left. It may again go from the center right, but basically from the center. It means smart, intelligent people ought to be able to, willing to keep their certainties to themselves and agree that compromise, when you deal with political parties, legislatures, and the like, is what makes things happen. That's my comment.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, and Rod. And Tom, since he addressed that to you, go ahead. And Carolyn, I think I want to hear from you, too. Republicans, he says, lead best from the center. What do you think, Tom?
Well, Rod Paul knows an awful lot about politics in the state, and we should listen to him. I think New Hampshire, by and large, is a centrist state. I think Ronald Reagan moved the political center right. It may be moving back a little bit to the left, but we are still center. And the reason you want to not forget about the center is because the center is, by definition, where most of the people are. And we've got to find a way to get at most of the people. I do think, and Jack alluded to it earlier and I think was correct, our process to nominate is a very difficult process. The extended process that of the presidential nomination went on so long, it did move our party well to the right. And particularly the end game was very much centered there. Centrist voters, and particularly women voters, did not feel part of that discussion. We were not talking about things that mattered to them. We got outside of that. When we get out on the edge a little bit further than we should have, we need to get back to the middle. We govern best from the middle. The reason John Lynch had the numbers he had was he was not viewed as a liberal or a moderate. He was viewed as a centrist.
Let me ask you a question, Tom. You said we got out on the edge. How come? Why?
Well, I think in order to win a primary process, particularly in states that had caucuses like Iowa and several others, where it is dominated more by the ideologic poll than maybe the sort of majority voting poll. I mean, that's the purification that New Hampshire brings to the process, is that we have actual voters as opposed to a party process.
What about in New Hampshire, though? I mean, again, it's been noted that New Hampshire, right, the state house, the executive council, the corner office,
the Democrats they've taken the middle away from us. And what did they do? Let's remember what they did. The defining issue forever was the issue of the income tax. That was where everybody was. We owned that issue. That's why when we talk about changing positions or altering positions and others, the Democrats did it. And since the Democrats, with Jeanne Shaheen, and Hugh Allen, took the pledge, they have won every single gubernatorial election except the one where they didn't take the pledge. They took that issue, and we keep wanting to pretend that that issue exists. We've had Democratic governors for 16 of the last 18 years, and you know what? We don't have an income tax. It is not credible for us anymore to use that issue as a differentiator. I'm sorry. It's just not. I wish it were. It was great. Axe the tax. Made great sense. But you know what? I had hair then. I was taller. It's gone. In 32 waist. It's gone. It's not coming back. And we've got to understand that. And we've got to understand that Fergus made the point, and he's exactly right. 2010 was the outlier.
What do
That's
you think,
not where
Carolyn?
This state is now.
Yeah, and I want to get you into this too, Carolyn, to Rod's point, to Tom's point, also to the point of Clyde from Concord, who says, I'm a moderate Republican. I know Ms. McKinney would prefer I not call myself a Republican. I could have supported Huntsman or Governor Pawlenty. I voted for Obama and Hassan because the party's extreme views on social issues, where is there room for me? What do you think about all these points, Carolyn? Republicans do best when they govern and campaign from the center.
Well, I think Tom made an interesting point about the income tax. And actually, it kind of rings true to my experience, you know, just in receiving all the election mail. You know, in my town, the Democrat state representatives were the mailers that they put out could have easily been put out by a Republican. And I feel like, you know, they're trying to use our language to appeal to voters. Like, for example, you know, someone put out something about, you know, fiscal responsibility. But, you know, the last time the Democrats were in office or, you know, were in power, they left us with a tremendous structural deficit that the Republicans had to fix under the leadership of O'Brien. So, you know, I'm not sure what to do with that because, you know, in some ways they're kind of, you know, taking our issues from us, but not really, because that's not necessarily how they're actually going to govern. But at the same time, you know, I think we need to be as persistent about pointing out their inconsistencies as they have been in, you know, kind of demonizing things that we've been doing. You know, when you look at the accomplishments of the last Republican legislature, they're, by and large, as Fergus pointed out, tremendous, you know, economic issues accomplishments. And, you know, they're things that are laying the foundation for a very strong New Hampshire moving forward, assuming that, you know, this legislature doesn't, you know, kind of roll the clock back on those. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, again, the Republicans are not getting out there and really talking about what they're actually accomplishing, which is everything that would, I think, appeal to a moderate voter. You know, yes, balance your budget and do it in a smart way where you actually have a little bit of a surplus at the end rather than, you know, scrambling to make up several million dollars to you know, because you misbudgeted at the beginning of the legislature. So, you know, that type of thing is very important. And I think that the voters didn't, or the people out there on a regular basis don't hear enough of that. You know, they just hear, you know, the kind of attacks that also go we don't respond to them in the way that we should.
All right. Well, all of you, we've got to wrap it up there. But Carolyn McKinney, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Carolyn McKinney, chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus of New Hampshire. Jack Kimble, good to have you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, glad to be here.
Jack Kimble, he's a former state GOP chair of the Granite State Patriots Liberty PAC. Tom Rath, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good to be with so many nice people.
Tom Rath, former New Hampshire Attorney General, longtime advisor to many presidential campaigns here in New Hampshire. And Fergus Cullen, thank you also for coming over.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Fergus Cullen, freelance columnist, principal of Fergus Cullen Communications, and a former Republican State Party chair. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.